In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Wednesday. Welcome back. Hope you had a nice one today. Been nice and warm in the upper 80s in the Northwest. Same tomorrow. And then right back down into the low 60s and high 50s. It's very strange what's going on, as I'm sure most of you well realize. I'm going to go down to the great state of Louisiana this first hour to talk to a friend of mine for a long time. One of the most remarkable people working on this planet, certainly one of the most quoted people in the entire world on the internet. His videos have been seen hundreds of millions of times. He is one of the most remarkable, legitimate journalists working, period. His work is always extraordinary because it is so based on fact, you can't touch it. All he does is cite and quote and point out the actions, the statements, and the positions of the people that he is endeavoring to help us all understand better, our alleged and purported masters, and many would say that there's no allegations or being purported involved. David Duke is standing by. Dr. D, are you there?
Yeah, I sure am, and it's thunderstorming down here in New Orleans. And I wish a lot of good wishes. I'm sure some people out there at the monuments, we've had about 50 yeah,
tell,
to 100
tell,
people every
tell
night.
Tell us about this, David. This is really sickening. What's going on down there? People don't know a lot of them, unfortunately, because the mainstream media is sitting on it.
Well, our people are going out to the monuments every night to defend them. They have also been...
What are the monuments? Tell us what they are.
Well, the monuments, well, first of all, there is the Liberty Monument, which was erected to the men who died fighting this corrupt Reconstruction government that took away even the right of the people of the state of Louisiana to vote if they had any participation in the war without any due process at all.
Right.
I think most Americans must understand that, and in fact, all Americans at one time understood that the South, first off, wasn't fighting, quote, for slavery, that nobody wrote home. In fact, I've read, actually, in the course of my life, I did a lot of research on the war between the states, and really it was the war of northern aggression in a lot of ways, because what the South did, and I know a lot of you are very partial to the North, and some of you are partial to the South who are listening, but let's be frank about it. What the South did in 1861 was exactly the same thing, the exact principle that America was founded itself upon in the Declaration of Independence. That is the right of every people to decide what government they live under. And they have the right, the human right and the political right to decide their own government. And if people choose to live under a different government or go their own way, the people joined in the colonies voluntarily.
Right.
Under the Declaration of Independence to fight the British and so forth in the American colonies and in the creation of America. And they had every right to leave voluntarily if they thought that that they were being treated tyrannically. And actually the South was. They were outnumbered very much by the North and West. And what they wanted for their society, for their policies, for the way of life was not according to what the North wanted. The same way that the colonies themselves felt very much oppressed by the British before the American Revolution. So the truth is that America was fighting and the South was fighting for self-government. Now, just about all Americans understood this, you understand,
right. Sure.
Until very recent times. In fact, Robert E. Lee is honored. And it was because the whole Congress, and again, the South has been outnumbered 4-1 in the Congress of the United States, right, for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And after this war, and after the passions died down from the war, the Northern veterans and the Southern veterans, they came together. America was united again. Southerners were very loyal Americans. But the North realized that Robert E. Lee was a very great man of honor. He was an American war hero in the war with Mexico. He was offered command of the Union Army, but he was not willing to fight against his own family members, his own people where he lived, his estate. He had a proud history of fighting his ancestry with the American revolutionaries against the great odds of the British. And he was an honorable man, and the North recognized that, and they put a statue of Robert E. Lee in the American Capitol, in the Hall of Heroes, the Statuary Hall. And they've also put a statue of the head of the Confederacy, former senator, by the way, of course, Jefferson Davis.
Right.
And by the way, after the war, they didn't dare try Jefferson Davis in a court of law for treason or anything else, because they know that he did nothing that was unconstitutional. There was no prohibition of a state deciding. And if you think about it now, remember the principle of the founding of America was the fact that every people had the right
to self-determination,
live government of their own choosing.
That's right.
Absolutely. To control their destiny. So, I mean, the North won, and the South actually didn't, you know, even though the South suffered greatly in that war. And by the way, this was a war by Lincoln. It was a war of aggression. You know, we lost over a million men, either terribly maimed or wounded. In fact, my grandfather, when I was 13 years old, used to tell me he was in Kansas. His antecedents were Union, uh-huh. And my mother's antecedents in Missouri were Confederate. And he used to tell me that not a day passed when he would go to Blue Rapids, a small town, or in Kansas City. And this is in the 1880s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Not a day passed when whenever he went into the city, he saw numerous men with one leg or no feet, in a wheelchair, the crude wheelchairs of the day,
yeah.
People blinded, people with patches over their eyes, people with one arm or not having any fingers on their hands, or all from the casualties of the war. So we had a million Americans suffer in this war, and this war was not needed. The other day, Trump had a real problem, because Trump came out and said, you know, the American people, both North and South, should have worked harder to prevent the war. The truth is, the South is not really responsible for, other than the fact they said they wanted to be independent. The North invaded the South. This is a historical fact.
100% correct. 100%.
Nobody argues. The North invaded the South, and the South won, in fact, the first big battles. And the South, under Robert E. Lee and the other Southern leaders, had the opportunity to, and they could have gone into, they could have walked into D.C., burned down every Capitol building, you know, basically destroyed the Capitol of the United States. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. We just want to go our own way. We have to end this bloodshed. There's already been too many killed in these first few battles.
Who else did the same sort of thing in Europe in World War II? Who could have gone into England and burned it down? And
it's interesting to know how big. Yeah, it is interesting in the sense that Europe also underwent a horrific occupation after the war, just like the South did. You had these radical communists in the East.
Millions died from 1945 to 1953. Millions.
You had race, you had all these things, and you had a very corrupt and corrosive government. You had people, you had a lot of Germans died. In fact, even on the Allied side, there's a very good book by Backe of Canada called Other Losses.
James Backe, Bacque, Other Losses, that's the book.
Right. And so, I mean, it's so interesting that there's a lot of similarities in some ways. And of course, what to remember, and I asked my northern friends, and I have many northern friends, and we're all together today, hopefully, because we got to understand that this is not simply a war against Confederate monuments and Confederate heroes. It's really a war against America. I went down and defended the statue of our great president, Andrew Jackson, in Jackson Square, New Orleans, who mm-hmm. won the great battle of New Orleans. Like, you mm-hmm. probably remember that from the time you were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, we lost David. Come on back, David. Come on back.
Won this right, battle, and actually probably the War of 1812 would extend. But he was a slaveholder, as was George Washington. George Washington's name had been stripped off of school.
Thomas Jefferson.
Say something.
Yeah.
They're not going to stop till they rename, you know, the Washington Monument something Ogabe Monument or something, Mandela Monument or something. Not going to stop until they drag down with ropes the statue of Thomas Jefferson the way they dragged down Saddam Hussein when they went to Iraq.
Not too
they're
outlandish,
not
David. Not with these upcoming generations of brain dead walking zombies. This is a possibility.
They've been brainwashed by the media. It's really sad. We have a very Zionist media, and that's what I want to talk about tonight. I really want to talk a lot about the fact is that the Zionists have really spilled their hand. We know now. I scan Israeli papers, and people send me Israeli papers, and I have, in fact, a few Jews that I know who've corresponded with me from Israel who also speak Hebrew, and I know Galat Osman very well, the very fine jazz. You've had him on your show, I think.
I know Galat really well.
Great
yeah.
man. He used to be the IDF, and now he's a true person who believes in human rights, and he understands the ultimate racism that Israel is, the absolute horror that Israel is. And we've had a number of Jewish newspaper articles, headlines in Israel, which are so revealing, and it reveals that our supposedly greatest ally, you've heard that by every president, including Trump, our greatest and long-standing ally, you know, with unshakable relationship with Israel, that our greatest ally, supposedly, Israel, which, by the way, is an ally that committed terrorism against us in the Levant affair, which is Operation Susanna, in the Liberty attack, which is coming up the 50th anniversary coming up this June. We're going to do
years.
A lot about it.
Wow.
And we got to get a lot of the survivors still on the show while they're still alive.
Yeah.
And also the Jonathan Pollard case, but This is it. Our great ally, who's supposed to always have our interest at heart, the head of the Israeli Defense Department, which is Yalon, came out and said, we want ISIS to win in Syria. It's in Israel's best interest for ISIS to win in Syria. He admitted that.
I know.
I'm not joking,
folks. It's unbelievable. All true.
It's unbelievable, too, when you think about it, because here's Syria, a secular government, a government that's supported by 3.5 million Christians.
Yeah.
I even have a copy with me on my computer here for the show from the New York Times. And, of course, all of you must know by now the New York Slimes is nothing more than a Zionist newspaper. And it's really amazing when you look at the New York Times, the ownership. In fact, a lot of people don't know this. I'm going to share with you some very important information tonight, and an amazing article. In fact, I've got an article here. In fact, a lot of this ran in the New York Times. In fact, the New York Times wrote about this because the New York Times, even though it's a massive stock-owned company, so there's probably many thousands of stockholders who have huge amounts of money invested, but the New York Times is actually controlled by, believe it or not, 8 directors, okay, who sit on the board of the Alks Sulzberger Family Trust. Now, I'm going to give you a direct quote, I think, out of the Wall Street Journal, one of the major papers, including this was also reported in the Times itself. Quote, the Alks Sulzberger Family Trust controls roughly 88% of the company's Class B shares. Any alteration to the dual class structure must be ratified by 6 of 8 directors who sit on the board of the Ochs-Sulzberger Family Trust. The board members are, and here are the members, here are the people who run the New York Times, the most powerful newspaper in the United States of America. It probably the most influential newspaper in the world. It's a newspaper that's quoted by other newspapers all over the world. It's read by every political and cultural elite around the world, right? And here are the people who control the New York Times. The trust board members are Daniel H. Cohen, James M. Cohen. Those are two coincidences I like to talk about a lot.
Coincidence, cute. That's good.
Coincidences. Lynn G. Dolnick, Susan Dreyfus, Michael Goldman, Eric Lacks, Arthur O. Sulzberger, and Kathy J. Sulzberger. Every one of these 8 people, and they only need 6 out of 8, but every one of the 8 people who totally control the Times, decide who's hired or fired, what the policy is, every one of them is Jewish, and every one of them is a radical pro-Zionist who supports the state of Israel, who supports Jewish advocacy and Jewish establishment organizations. And all of them support not only the state of Israel, this racist supremacist state of Israel, by the way, which has segregated schools for Jews and Arabs mostly. They have settlements they've stolen from the Palestinians where a Palestinian can't even walk on it. The same media that's always ready to condemn European Americans who stand up for our heritage and our culture in this country that we're still the vast majority of, actually. The same people who say that nothing's more evil than to want a preservation of the European people, whether it even be in Europe or America, are the same people who support a state based on the preservation of the Jewish people, that's Jewish supremacist, that was created by ethnically cleansing and murdering and torturing and driving out 600,000 people from their homes, their businesses, their farms.
Right.
And these same Jewish organizations that Cohen and Dolnick and Dreyfus and Golden and Eric Lacks and Arthur Sulzberger and Kathy Sulzberger support. They support organizations that spend hundreds of millions of dollars to prevent Jewish intermarriage with non-Jews. That's a fact. That's what they do. And yet the same newspaper, the New York Times, tells us how evil it is if a European actually might want his grandchild to look something like he and his wife.
I know.
It's really unbelievable. Now, I'll give you another quote here. They even in the article, one of the articles I have about the ownership of the Time, they even just basically talk about the Jewish role of it. Listen to this quote. Who are they? The only thing we know for sure is that every one of them is Jewish. Each is strongly supportive of Zionism and Israel, openly dedicated to Jewish organizations and the interests of the Jewish people in every sphere. They give to Jewish philanthropy, as well as to Jewish political and social advocacy, important in a world that's become increasingly uncomfortable for those who wear the climbing shoes of the new American and world elite. So here's an article where they're talking about it's very important that Jews control this paper because the world's becoming increasingly uncomfortable because people are waking up to this Jewish elite that's taken over. It even goes on to say something about David Brooks. He says, quote, Times columnist David Brooks described them as the ethnicity that transformed the American elite and America itself. They also transformed the Times, the New York Times, from a goyische Zeitung, which it's German for Gentile newspaper, to a world power in its own right. We are glad the control of the paper is unassailable. We are better off if it stays as it is, what it is, a voice for a new age and not the faults of the past. The faults of the past are America, the traditional America. And by the way, the Times says this in an article by How Punch Protected the Times. Punch is a name for Sulzbergers.
Right.
It's by Joe Nocero of the New York Times. This is October 1st, 2012. He quotes this guy Morton, and he says, you can talk about the fact that a dual class structure is unfair to shareholders, says John Morton, a veteran newspaper analyst. But I'm a sucker for a good newspaper, for good newspapers. I'm glad the Times is owned the way it is. And it was by the small clique of Jewish racist supremacist Zionists. He goes on to say, Every reader, this is what Nocero says in the New York Times, in a New York Times article, every reader should feel likewise. It's October 1st. So they're saying there isn't it great that the New York Times is controlled only by Jews and by Jews who support Jewish interests, Jewish advocacy organizations. Now, all this is really important because the spokesman, I mean, literally the most well-known pundit of the New York Times, the most celebrated pundit, and they have pundits for economy who are Jews. They have pundits for, like as we said, David Brooks, who's Jewish. We have Thomas Friedman, who's Jewish, who's one of the biggest architects of the New York Times. And he writes in the New York Times in a series of articles, which I've documented on my website. He writes that America needs to support ISIS. And anybody that's listening who doubts this, I have the quotes. I can even quote a couple on the show. He says that America should support ISIS. This is the same ISIS and Al-Qaeda, by the way, the same ISIS who has killed Americans, countless numbers who killed and threatened Americans all over the world.
How many civilians have they butchered for fun?
10,000, count all the Middle East. And that's how many men, women, and children.
These are not human. They're not human beings. Sorry. That didn't work for me.
I think that these warmongers, I don't think they are human beings that are responsible for this. And I've got a couple headlines, and I'd love to illustrate these things with headlines from the media in Israel, right?
So, go to the source. That's right there.
Here's a headline. Israel Minister of Defense wants ISIS takeover Syria. It's in Israel's interest. Here's a headline from the Daily Mail, all right? And it has a big picture of Israeli military ministering, and that is, giving first aid and, in fact, taking them to the hospital, taking them to Israel to treat their wounds, saving ISIS beheaders, murderers, right? And then healing them and sending them back to the front so they can go kill more Christians and go kill more moderates. And the Daily Mail, to show you the length and breadth of the Zionist power in media all over the world, the headline reads, listen to this. It shows a picture of a guy with a big Star David and the people in the Israeli uniform. And this is the headline, the Daily Mail in Great Britain. Daily Mail says, saving their sworn enemy. Heart-stopping footage shows Israeli commandos rescuing wounded men from the Syrian war zone. But why are they risking their lives for Islamic militants?
Unbelievable.
I mean, yeah,
it's so beyond belief, David, and to point this out from the source, this is an Israeli paper, all right? This is how these people think. You've got to understand that. Hold on a minute, my friend. We have to pause.
Humanitarians, that's why they're risking. Yeah. It's not because they want the destruction of the Syrian enemy, and the killing of Christians.
No.
And everybody else.
That's right.
It's great.
All right. Hold on a minute. David and I'll be right back. David Duke. Dr. Duke is with us once a month. You can hear him every day on the Rents Radio Network, of course. And do tune in, because what you'll hear there, you'll hear nowhere else on any broadcast media platform. All right, David, go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you, we're talking about the Zionist New York Times and the hypocrisy about all that. Did you see the Sunday New York Times? I can share this with everybody listening. If those people think that this is not a pro-communist, a pro-anti-American...
It's a Bolshevik rag. It's a complete enemy of this country.
Well, sure. I can prove that to anybody with an open mind right now. Here is the April 29th this Sunday's edition, which is the biggest edition of the New York Times. Okay.
Right.
The name of the article, right? The headline of the article is, and I quote, "When Communism Inspired Americans." And then it has underneath it has Red Century. Looks like something you'd probably expect to read in some just openly the communist New York Times or something. It was called the Communist Party. I mean, this is what it says. I mean, it's just almost beyond human belief. It's hard to even talk about it without, you know, just snickering about what they're doing in this country. But in this article, let me get it exactly for you, because I want to get the exact wording for you exactly the way it is, so nobody has any problem with what's being said here. Here we go. That's Friedman. Just a minute. I had it all handy here, and now I don't. Oh, here it is. So here it is. It's a Sunday edition. All right. The name of the article is "When Communism Inspired Americans." It's written by Vivian Gornick, and it's under a subtitle, "Red Century." And Vivian Gornick, obviously, is one of the chosen as well, as like all the owners of the New York Times. And the whole thing is a big peon to how wonderful the communists were and how they suffered because they were followed and their phones bugged and all these wonderful communists. And she says she talks lovingly of her mother, and she talks about her parents were both communists. And she says, "My mother was in the audience that night and said when she came home, America was fortunate to have had the communists here. Today, more than most, prodded the country into becoming the democracy it always said it was." Can you believe this? Yeah. I mean, these people worship Leon Trotsky, the first head of the Red Army, the Communist Party, not only in Russia, but the international around the world. The United States Congress recognized the fact and, in fact, commemorated the victims of communism, which the United States Congress said at this point, which is in the 1950s when they did this declaration, 60s, it was 94 million victims, tens of millions in Russia, over 7 to 11 million in Ukraine.
Right.
We had millions more in Eastern Europe, tens of millions in China. We even had a couple million slaughtered in Cambodia. I mean, people, communism killed at least 100 million people in the world.
And the
Russian troops, which were communist troops, they were under control of communists. I don't blame the Russians for this. The Russians were the victims of communism.
And they've never forgotten that, by the way, David, as you well know. They know who their enemies are.
And by the way, these same communists, you know, you realize that in Russia, they dispossessed anybody who owned the smallest farm, a home. They just threw them out. They threw them in the cold, and anybody who was an intelligentsia, anybody who was intelligent, who wasn't a Jewish intelligentsia or Marxist, they just literally threw them in the gulags, shot them, tortured them, killed them. This was the most evil phenomena ever in the history of the world. I hope everybody listening will read my book, The Secret Behind Communism. And this is the truth, but here's the New York Times. Let me give you another quote from it. She says, "It's perhaps hard to understand now," she says, Ms. Gornick, "but at that time in this place, the Marxist vision of world solidarity, as translated by the Communist Party, induced in the most ordinary of men and women a sense of one's own humanity that ran deep, made life feel large, large and clarified." It was this clarity of inner being that so many became not only attached to, but
man. To.
Now think about this. These are people who threw tens of millions of people out of their homes where they worked for their whole lives and generations, for off their farms, out of their the places they lived. I mean, these are people that put tens of millions of people in the gulags, that killed 30 million, at least 30 million people even before the beginning of the Second World War in Russia. Also slaughtered a lot of people in Bela Kun's Hungary. We can go, you know, on and on about that. We can talk about the communist slaughters all over the world. And this is one big, long pay and a pray. And this was in the New York Times Sunday's edition, right? Sunday edition. And the title is "When Communism Inspired Americans."
Unbelievable. So, is repulsive, David. Absolutely repulsive.
Russia overthrew communism. We're the ones that we have the major paper of the country supporting communism.
That's right? Correct. That's correct. Absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's all too much. The average American doesn't know because they're not allowed to know. The media and the education system, so-called, is catering to a mindset among our two youngest generations, which is so closed to any kind of new knowledge like this. It's too revolutionary for them. They can't handle it. They don't want to hear it. So they don't know. They don't know our values. They don't know what it's like. Yeah. They don't know what it's like to live in a world with responsibility, with a proactive approach toward life, with an idea that you want to succeed. No, it's more of an entitlement, victim, drooling, zombie consumerism that's runs through their veins. It's very sad.
Let me tell you the latest effort about me. Of course, as you know, I've made 122 videos, and there's actually thousands and thousands of videos out there of my speeches,
lectures at
universities.
How many views now? Over a billion, is it?
A couple billion, I think, altogether of all the things that I've done that's published by actually 250,000 individuals of videos have been made of my work, my speeches and lectures and television program debates, radio debates, and all that, and the radio show as well. So there's 250,000 of those on the internet. But this is interesting because, as you know, Google, after a lot of pressure from the world Jewish community, of course, we know the Jewish establishment has no power. They're poor. You know, we should never talk about Jewish power because they don't have any power. But they got the British government. They discussed me and they debated me in the British government, and they brought Google to task for YouTube for the fact that I had my videos out there. So YouTube caved in to their threats, and they were threatening to destroy the whole company. That's how much power they have, that they could destroy the biggest video distributor in the world. And also, they've already changed Amazon now to where Amazon won't even run any books that simply historically challenge some of the aspects of the Holocaust. You know, I don't really talk much about the Holocaust. I talk about the biggest Holocaust in the world, which is the Bolshevik Holocaust, which never has any movies about it, which doesn't have any museums about it, which doesn't have any diaries of Russian girls or boys that went through holy hell at the hands of the communists, rape and everything else by them, or the Eastern Europeans that went under this.
Right.
And it's like, well, I just found out not only have they demonetized us because they're trying to choke me financially, and maybe some of your listeners can help us a little bit because we have a very small budget, but we...
I didn't know you were demonetized. When did this happen, David?
Well, this happened about a month ago.
Wow.
And they even had... we're putting out a video of this even showing you the debate in the parliament. And they lied about the name of the video so people couldn't even find the video. Uh-huh. And they said it was anti-Semitic. And all it did was it showed the truth about the Zionist policy of divide and conquer in the Middle East and what's going on with ICE, all this other stuff. And that wasn't even the name of the video. The actual video's name was How Zionists Divide and Conquer. But they chose a name to try to make it sound like anti-Semitic and made up a name and made it impossible for people to look it up. And now we find out I've gotten 122 notices from YouTube that every video I made of any subject, even a tribute I made to my pet dog that died, Tori, a wonderful dog that used to lecture with me basically at universities and travel with me all over the world and lived with me in Russia for a long time in Ukraine. And I made a beautiful tribute to her. She used to hike with me in the mountains. Even my video about my dog was banned. In other words, right now in France and Germany and Austria and Italy and Poland and other major European countries, every video that I've ever done, whether it's even just talking about the fact that the Iraq war was a war, you know, orchestrated by the Zionists and the New York Times, anything.
Right.
Every video now has been banned. In other words, anything I do, I can say the sky is a beautiful day today, but that video would be banned because I do it. I'm like a person who's been made into an unperson. It sounds like 1984.
You're a non-person. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. But thank God people can still find a way to get to a lot of this. But the big shutdown's coming down. We are moving directly toward a 1984 scenario, unfortunately. in this country and around the world.
Most unfortunate. Let me do one thing real quick here. There was a man named Benjamin Friedman, F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N, and I'd like you to look him up. He is known as a Jewish defector, and he warned America in a classic 1961 speech. I'm just going to play a little bit. I've got it up in headlines. I'll move it up tonight. Now, all of you listening have a right to hear this man, a truly heroic Jewish American who renounced the scam, the criminality of what was being done under the name of Judaism. Now, here we go.
H. Friedman was one of the most intriguing and amazing individuals of the 20th century. Mr. Friedman, born in 1890, was a successful Jewish businessman of New York City who was at one time the principal owner of the Woodbury Soap Company. He broke with organized Jewry after World War II and spent the remainder of his life and the great preponderance of his considerable fortune, at least $2.5 million, exposing the Jewish power structure which dominates the United States. Mr. Friedman's testimony is especially important because he had been an insider at the highest levels of Jewish organizations and Jewish machinations to gain power over our nation. Mr. Friedman was personally acquainted with Bernard Baruch, Samuel Untermeyer, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Joseph Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, and many more movers and shakers of our times. This speech was given before a patriotic audience in 1961 at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C., on behalf of Condi McGinley's patriotic newspaper of that time, Common Sense. Though in some minor ways this wide-ranging and extemporaneous speech has become dated, Mr. Friedman's essential message to us, his warning to the West, is more urgent than ever before. Listen.
Here in the United States, the Zionists and their co-religionists have complete control of our government. For many reasons, too many and too complex to go in here, at this time, I'd be glad to answer questions, however, to support that statement. The Zionists and their co-religionists rule with the United States as though they were the absolute monarchs of this country. Now you say, well, that's a very broad statement to make, but let me show what happened while you were... I don't want to wear that out. Let me show you what happened while we were all asleep. I'm including myself with you. We were all asleep. What happened? World War I broke out in the summer of 1914. 1914 was the year in which World War I broke out. There are a few people here my age who remember that. Now, that war was waged on one side by Great Britain, France, and Russia, and on the other side by Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey.
Okay, I'm going to stop it there and invite all of you to listen to this speech. It just goes on and on as he walks through history and tells it exactly like it really was. He knew he was at the top of the Jewish establishment, and to this day, he is considered to be anathema by most every Zionist on the planet. Benjamin,
I would like
Friedman.
To bring all that to the current day, if you'd like, because I want to show how the New York Times, even, and how Jewish newspapers in Israel admit the fact that they've led us into the Iraq war based on lies.
Yeah.
And this was all led by Zionists. Could I do that for a minute?
Please do. Go ahead.
Okay. So in 2003, I saw this actually in 2003. I worked very hard against the Iraq war, and it was a bunch of lies. There was an article in Haaretz newspaper, one of the major newspapers of Israel. And the article was very ridiculously titled White Man's Burden, but it was all about the Iraq war, which was being planned. This is right before the Iraq war. Now, it starts off to show you they're always a little bit deceptive, because it starts off by saying the war in Iraq was conceived by 25 neoconservative intellectuals, most of them Jewish, who are pushing President Bush to change the course of history. Two of them, journalists William Kristol and Charles Krauthammer, and by the way, both those guys are always on Fox News today, say it's possible. right? Now, interestingly enough, two paragraphs down when the actual article stops, they don't say most. They basically say the truth. Let me give you the quote. In the course of the past year, a new belief has emerged in the town. The belief in war against Iraq. That ardent faith was disseminated by a small group of 25 or 30 neoconservatives, almost all of them Jewish. So they were now it's not a majority. Now almost all of them Jewish.
Uh-huh.
Almost all of them intellectuals in partial list: Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, William Crystal, Elliot Abrams, Charles Krauthammer, people who are mutual friends and cultivate one another and are convinced that political ideas are a major driving force of history. Yeah, when you control these critical issues, you are a driving force of history. Okay, now, so this is the same thing Friedman was talking about, but it's more closer to modern day. Now it says, listen to this quote right out of Haaretz. This is an amazing quote. It's an interview they did with Mr. Friedman of the New York Times, not the same Friedman that you just listened to, a different Friedman, one of the co-religionists that Friedman was talking about. And Thomas Friedman says, this is with the Jewish pundit, New York Times. Here it goes. Is the Iraq war the great neoconservative war? It's the war the neoconservatives wanted, Friedman says. It's the war the neoconservatives marketed. Those people had an idea to sell when September 11 came, and they sold it. Oh, boy, did they sell it. So this is not a war that the masses demanded. In other words, the American people demanded. This is a war of an elite. Friedman laughs. I could give you the names of 25 people, all of whom are at this moment within a five-block radius of this office, that's the New York Times, who, if had been exiled to a desert island a year and a half ago, the Iraq War would not have happened. Huh. Now, we'll come over to the current times, right? And we'll look at the next article by Friedman, and this is about the truth about really the Iraq war, to tell you the truth. It's really kind of amazing because they make admissions. And he says, this is about a year ago, when he literally says that we absolutely should be supporting ISIS in ISIS against the Syrian people, the Syrian Christians and the other Christians there. So here's the article. Let me get it for you. Make sure I got it right handy.
Your email is still bouncing. I sent you the Friedman video, but it bounced back again. So somebody's playing games.
I don't know why that is. My email seems to be working.
Well, they're playing games. Yeah.
Well, let me get this for you real quick. Let me get this. Here's the this second. I want to get this back. I had it a second ago. Yeah, here it is. No, it's not it. Just one moment. I'm sorry for the delay, and we'll get it.
No problem. Take your time.
All right. Time support.
Plenty of time for the truth.
I got about four things with Friedman in here, and I got to get now.
By the way, Benjamin Friedman, the man I played the little excerpt from, is spelled F-R-E-E-D, Friedman, M-A-N, not I-E-D.
That's a little different than the other one, for sure. But it's still, you know, he was just one that, as you said, he's one that basically turned against them. Just like Gamal Osman did, and then you got to say a lot, and it takes a lot of courage.
Well, his consciousness came up and said, "Hey, no more." And he said, "Yeah, I agree."
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. So let's see what we got here. I think we got one of these close. Man, I got so much stuff in here, I can't see.
Look, there's nothing. What we're talking about here, let me say this. There's nothing we're talking about here that is anti-Semitic in any way, shape, or form. These are just facts. Facts are facts, and I can't change them. There's nothing wrong with reporting the facts. That's what journalism is supposed to be. So if the New York Times were a journalistic operation, it would be reporting the speeches of Benjamin Friedman, for example, to show that there are differences in the elite of world Zionism. And this is one of the most extraordinary examples. Benjamin Friedman, a true American, above all other issues and belief systems. He's he was a great man. And I hope all of you will take a chance. And some of you are skeptical, but listen to the man. He spoke.
Here's the quote now from 2015, September 30th, end of 2015. Now, in this article, Friedman admits that there is no moderate opposition to the government of Syria, and that Syria has been invaded by radical Islamic terrorists. Okay, So this is what he says. He says, during the weekend, the Times reported that nearly 30,000 foreign fighters have traveled to Iraq and Syria from more than 100 countries since 2011. So 30,000 people have gone to Syria to join ISIS to promote jihad and the caliphate. How many Arabs and Muslims have walked to Syria to promote multi-sectarian democracy? Apparently zero. And then he goes on to say that we should be supporting ISIS because he says, why do we have to search for moderates like a man with a dowsing and looking for water and then train them? Well, no one has to train the jihadists who flock there. It's because the jihadists are in the grip of ideals, albeit warped ones. There is no critical mass of Syrian moderates in the grip of ideals. They will fight for their own homes and families, but not for an abstract ideal like democracy. Well, I think it's pretty much of an idea of people to fight for their own homes and families. So here's Syria, Obama, and Putin by Thomas Friedman. He's basically admitting all this, and he goes on to say that we should actually be supporting ISIS. Then on April 12th, he writes another article. The headline is the New York Times, in the commie New York Times. Why is Trump fighting ISIS in Syria? Why is Trump fighting ISIS in Syria? He's asking, why is Trump fighting ISIS? When the truth is, we should be fighting with ISIS. He said we should right now be trying to defeat the Islamic State in Syria. Of course, ISIS is detestable. But is it really in our interest to be focusing on ISIS in Syria? No, because they want Syria, obviously, to fall to ISIS.
That's right.
So all those millions of people who will be murdered and raped, including the Christians of Syria,
especially the Christians.
It's amazing. Then I've got an article here from the Times of Israel to show you what our Jewish allies...
This does prove that there is a First Amendment in this country, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know we're almost out of time, but here's the Times of Israel. This is just a few days ago, right? The headline is, ex-defense minister of Israel says ISIS apologized to Israel for November clash. What he said was that ISIS contacted Israel, his office, and they apologized for attacking an Israeli military patrol in the Golan. Now, this is the same ISIS that chops off people's heads, that brags about killing women, but they contact Israel and apologize because obviously Israel has been supporting and supplying and giving them weapons and trying to...
David, do you remember the story of... a couple of years ago, over 1,200 Israeli medical personnel were said to be in the field, in field hospitals, treating ISIS wounded, patching them up and sending them back into battle if possible.
Now, there's Israelis. One more story we got to talk about for 1 second. I know we're out of time, but there is a headline tonight. This is breaking news, okay? Here's the headline. Report, Jared Kushner didn't disclose $1 billion in loans.
Yeah.
Invest ties to Goldman Sachs and George Soros.
Soros.
So he's in trouble now, okay? Yeah. Because when he qualified, just as a couple of months ago, for the White House, he didn't disclose $1 billion in loans from George Soros. Now, the interesting thing is that Goldman Sachs threatened any employee who supported Trump to be fired. Remember that during the campaign.
Yeah.
And George Soros, and by the way, one of their executives was appointed head of the economy. And George Soros was the biggest enemy of Donald Trump and the biggest single contributor to Clinton. And here's Trump's nephew, Kushner, Jared Kushner.
Son-in-law.
Right?
Yeah.
Son-in-law, that's right. Here he is supporting, right? And in business with the biggest enemy of Donald Trump, who opposed everything Donald Trump stood for. And Kushner, by the way, is a far leftist who's been for open borders his whole life, pro-abortion, which is certainly not Trump's values.
Yeah.
He has been absolutely for free trade. He has interest, in fact, in China. No wonder he does. He wants to destroy that.
Yeah.
He has been on the wrong. He's for absolute gun control, taking away guns. And this guy right now... He's like the president of the United States.
He's a left liberal communist, just like his wife, Princess Ivanka, who said open borders for Syrian Muslims and other Muslim refugees are not enough.
You know, it's just unbelievable. There is some good news in the fact that Trump just recently made a statement that he thought that he was going to meet with Putin and he thought we could heal the issues.
I don't know. I don't trust anything he says anymore. David, thank you.
I understand that. I don't either. But here's the situation that we're not going to get anything better with this other guy. And, you know, we're not going to get anything better with the Democrats.
No.
We definitely have to. Well, here's what's happening, though. Trump, even though maybe he doesn't even want to, even what he's doing now that's against us is still exposing the Jewish power. And the only way we're ever going to free this country and save our people and get America
say goodnight. Yeah.
By overthrowing the Zionist, Jewish, extremist, racist supremacists. That's the only way we can do it.
Yeah.
And every day people are getting this red pill and they're learning the truth. And like the Kushner thing, they see what's going on.
Oh,
they see
it's disgusting. Yeah,
yeah. But it's also revealing, isn't it? That's one.
You
good
bet
thing.
It is. Yeah. Yep, there it is. Thank you, David.
10 o'clock tomorrow Central Time, 11 o'clock Eastern Time.
All right, take care. Thanks. And we will be right back with our number two after this.